Chapter 4. Imperial Fist's Frigate Unbreakable Truth, Trans-Neptunian Region, Pluto Approach. The fires of battle grew in Archimus's eye as he strode through the machine decks. The projection of Pluto flickered and shone in the left eyepiece of his helm. Behind him, Kestros and Andromeda followed, their voices silenced by the command he had just given.
"Do you have any questions?" he asked. "No, Lord," said Kestros.
"No. No questions," said Andromeda,
her voice surprisingly steady, considering she was almost running to keep up with their progress through the ship as it closed on the orbits of Pluto.
"In the circumstances, there are very few options, given that I doubt she would advocate fleeing."
Kestros growled.
"I thought not," she said.
"My strike point?" asked Kestros. "Hydra is a small moon, but still a moon. If this is to work, we cannot be hunted through the whole fortress."
"The Central Communications Centre," said Andromeda without hesitation. "They will have taken or destroyed the means for our forces to sense or speak to one another. We start there."
They reached a junction. A squad of warriors armed with boarding shields met them and fell in beside Archimus without a word.
"When you have..."
The name he was going to say caught against his teeth. He stopped in his stride and turned to look at Kestros, who had halted as well.
"When you have the target confirmed, send the signal. I will be ready at the core reactor controls."
"And then you will become the destroyer, Praetorian," said Andromeda,
and he saw that the expression on her face had lost all traces of her bite and bile.
"You may remain on board the Unbreakable Truth, Mistress," he said, "for all the safety that may afford you."
She laughed, the sound high and clear.
"No, I don't think so. Surviving this is unlikely to be the better option of those available. And besides, work undone is a tragedy."
Archimus nodded once.
"As you will it, daughter of Luna."
"Thank you, son of Dawn."
"Will it succeed?"
asked Kestros as Archimus began to turn, and he saw that the sergeant's jaw was set, his eyes focused on some distant point before them.
"I do not know," he said.
Around him the ship quivered as it cut through the void. Machine noise buzzed down the passage. The sound of running feet rang on the deck as servitors hurried to their tasks.
"But I do know that it is what we must do. If any in Lord Sigismund's fleet have heard our warning, they cannot reach Hydra in time. We alone know who is here and are able to strike."
He held Kestros's gaze for a moment before turning and striding down the corridor, his lone squad following in his wake. Before him, the doors to the teleportation chambers clanked open. Kestros and Andromeda remained, looking after him for a second, before the doors closed. Storage Vault 278, Hydra Moon Fortress, Plutonian Orbit. Red light blinked across Miss Madra's eyes as she came through the door. The crew surf at the opposite door turned fast and collected a Volkite blast in the chest. Flame raced through his body, ash blurring the pulsing light. She was already at the next door. Morhan and the rest of the auxiliary squad were behind her. The hatch in front of her was sealed shut, the keypad stubbornly blinking failure at each attempt to open it. A glance at it told her that she could fire every weapon at it that they had and do no more than distress the surface.
"Primary, this is row 2, she said into the vox. "Entry into the vault is deadlocked. I repeat, entry to target hangar is deadlocked."
"Code override is not possible," replied a voice across the vox,
and she recognized the texture of Hecaron's voice, growling from the communication control center on the other side of the moon.
"There is an auxiliary squad inside the chamber, patching you through to vox hailers inside the hatch. They have had no orders or external contact since the beginning of the mission. Make it sound good."
"Confirm," she said. "Make the link."
The vox speed spat static in her ear.
"This is auxiliary squad Ares," she shouted,
panting breath into the words. Beyond the hatch, her voice would be booming from vox speakers into the hangar bay.
"Open this hatch! Enemy is inside station and closing. We have senior astropath Nurine with us. We need access now. The enemy are inside the fortress and closing. I repeat, open this hatch."
The static boiled up in her ear again, but no reply came. She frowned and began again.
"This is..."
The hatch in front of her trembled as mag bolts released. She fought down a thrill of surprise as the door hinged outwards. A meter-thick layer of adamantium and plasteel slid outwards, and inwardly she reflected that it would need a turbo laser to bore through it. That, or more time and patience than she had. She braced to push it as a crack appeared around the door. She leapt through the gap. She saw a figure fall in a tangle of limbs, and then she was through, weapon raised and firing as she ran. Her shot hit an auxiliary in the face and burned through his head. Behind her, the rest of the squad poured through the hatch, and the other three auxiliaries died before they could fire a shot. She stopped after 10 strides. The chamber extended away from her, echoing and empty. Structural pillars rose from the floor to meet the vaulted ceiling. Scuffed hazard stripes marked the edge of the floor. Pools of dirty light fell from grates set high above and at the edges. Lifter hoists hung from rails overhead, bunches of chain hanging from them.
"Move the Homer in. We need to be done and clear of here fast."
"This is it," said Ashul as he stepped through the hatch. "This is a lot of emptiness to have as a key objective."
"It's a volatile munitions vault,"
she said, eyes still scanning the gloom.
"Near impregnable once sealed. Vox can't even get through without a link."
"I know what it is. It just seems a strange place to set up a teleport, Homer. We've just spent a long time shutting down the teleport jammers built into this place. I mean, why would we want to shunt troops through the immaterium and then have them appear very precisely here?"
"Who says it's for our troops?"
"Oh.
Get set up,"
she said, looking around as Morhan and another auxiliary lugged the second casket through the door. The dead astropath was long gone from inside, and the panels beneath peeled back to reveal the equipment within.
"We don't have long."
Plutonian orbit. The Alpha Legion fleet twisted around Pluto and squeezed tight. At the instant that Hydra fell, Silonius's fleet had split into 3 distinct parts. In the gulf beyond the system edge, 80 warships had spiraled around the Imperial Fist's vessels as they came about and clawed back towards Pluto's orbit. The afterglows from the fireship's detonations were spreading and changing color, like bruises left on the skin of space. Fire and debris bled from the Imperial Fist's ships. Blades of macrofire cut to and from them, latticing the dark. Closing with the moons of Pluto was the swarm of intruder ships that had drawn the defenders out. The wrecks of their sisters lay in their wake, sacrificed to the Imperial Fist's guns. The main Alpha Legion assault fleet cut through the sphere of orbit. 156 warships followed the Alpha into the curve of Pluto's gravity well. They swept past Hydra, pausing to drop troops into the already stricken station. That task done, the fleet bore down on the next fortress moon in its path. Nix poured munitions into the path of the warships, and fire churned the darkness around the Alpha Legion vessels. For a moment it looked as though they would have to run the gauntlet of the Wall of Fire, as they had with Kerberos. But then Kerberos itself emerged from behind the bulk of Pluto and fired on its sibling moon. Ordnance hammered into Nix's surface, burning through its crust and breaking scabs of armor from its bastions. Its own batteries fired back, and the space between the two moons became a bridge of burning light. If the garrison of Nix had hoped for help from Styx and Charon, their hopes guttered even as Kerberos mauled them. Hydra had poured contradictory firing and target information into the communications network. Commands to treat the attackers as friendly, different firing orders and competing priorities warred for attention. It took the fortress seneschals and tech priests on Styx, Charon, and Nix several minutes to sift the false from the real and give true firing orders. Not long, but long enough for the Alpha Legion strike fleet to close and launch a wave of assault craft. Kerberos switched fire as the gunships and torpedoes powered towards Nix, and its fleet-breaking firepower began to hammer into the surface of the next fortress moon. In the outer layers of Nix, the Imperial Fists and their vassals were waiting as the torpedoes crashed through armor and rock. The tips of the torpedoes blew open, blasting molten armor and stone through vaulted chambers and passages. Bolt rounds hammered out from firing points to greet the warriors who emerged from the torpedoes. They stepped into the light, the deep, iridescent blue of their armor, stark in the blinking flare of gunfire. They were the Lernaeans, the teeth of the Hydra, and they had come to claim the kill for their legion. Each squad raised their weapons as one, Reaper cannons arming, chargers activating with a buzz like the promise of a lightning strike. Out in the deep dark of one half-dead enemy vessel, First Captain Sigismund emerged from the mouth of a passage. Blood covered his armor and tabard, daubing him in gloss shades of red and orange.
"Get everything back to the Fortress Moons!"
he shouted, as soon as his vox came in range of the lacrimae. And the reply that stole the feeling from his limbs came from far Hydra, cutting through vox traffic with a rasp of cold static.
"Pluto has fallen," it said. "You are broken. You are alone."
Imperial Fist's frigate Unbreakable Truth, orbital approach Hydra. Archimus watched the moon grow ever closer. Stitches of light crossed his helmet display. Drifts of burning gas cloaked Hydra's surface. He blinked the display away. Pillars of machinery rose around him, aching with growing power. Static was spidering up his bionic limbs. The teleport chambers seemed to crowd around him, high walls and ceiling pulling close as though both were suddenly nearer than they should be. His squad ringed him, helmeted, shields and weapons ready. His teeth began to ache. A high-pitched whine grew in the air. Neon worms skipped across the metal disc beneath his feet.
"A strike force gunship's ready to launch,"
said Majos Cheo's voice, the vox chopping the words into sharp bursts of noise.
"I have done my best to conceal our approach using the manifold instances of macro-destruction and ordnance deployment occurring. But at some point they are going to notice us."
"Will we be in range at that point?"
"Very probably. In fact, we should be at optimal launch and teleportation displacement location in 56 seconds.
Cheo paused.
"Presuming that the ship is not annihilated by enemy fire in that time."
"Good," said Archimus. "You have my command to activate the teleporter and launch Kestros's gunships."
"By your will."
"And Cheo?"
"Yes, honored Master Huskarl."
"Thank you."
20 seconds,
said a machine voice from the dark. The pillars began to glow. Cords of lightning flicked into the air. Archimus's skin felt as though needles were pushing out from beneath its surface. In other circumstances, he would have spoken, would have cast his voice across the vox to his brothers waiting in the dark of the gunships or standing beside him. But now, at this moment, he said nothing. They did not need words, and he had none to give. Not now. Not as they all stood on the precipice.
"You are old," he thought. "Old and worn by war. But I will not fail in this. I will not submit to it."
A face emerged from memory. The face of a youth who would never grow to be a warrior. The face of the brother in blood. And then it became the tattooed face of a man who had sat in the dark with him in another life that now seemed a dream.
"That is why I chose you, Kai,"
said the face in the forgotten dream.
"Approaching launch terminus in 3, 2, 1.
Brightness. Blue-white. A lightning strike that swallowed sight and sound. Cold blood, dead sound, blackness. And then a flash of colour and shape, and the feeling of falling without moving. Silence wrapped around him. He blinked and sight came back. The chamber walls rose above him, steel spreading up to a vaulted ceiling. High banks of machines marched away into the quiet gloom. Lights winked and flickered across a block of machinery on the floor. Antennae rose from its sides, and the air above it shimmered.
"Teleport, Homer,"
said the tech marine, moving from the rest of the squad. He was called Nucreo. Archimus had brought him to deal with the moon's reactor controls. Now he bent down beside the Homer, head tilting to the side as he examined the cluster of machinery.
"Pulled us right onto its beacon. We are a long way off target."
"Kestros,"
Archimus said, triggering the long-range vox.
"Cheo, do you hear me?"
Flat static filled his ear in answer.
"This is a shielded vault,"
said Nucreo.
"Signals will not be able to get in or out."
Spirals of warp smoke rose from the shoulders of his squad as they divided into trios and moved outwards, shields raised, gun muzzles tracking the quiet shadows. Archimus paused by the teleport beacon. The lights blinked on its casing. Pulse, pulse. Pulse, pulse. Pulse.
"Disperse," said Archimus.
His skin was still prickling from the teleportation, but underneath that he could feel ice running through his skin.
"Find an exit. Maximum caution."
Hydra Moon Fortress, Plutonian Orbit.
"Stare ready,"
said Kestros. The gunship's internal lights blinked red, and the assault hatches peeled back. All sound vanished. Harsh white light flared across his sight. His jump pack cycled to life. The surface of Hydra turned beneath him. Grey towers, armored domes, and spires of aerials flicked past as the gunship dived. Three other craft hugged its wings. Explosions burst high overhead, but this close to the moon's skin, the defense turrets were silent. The Alpha Legion's taking of Hydra had stolen its ability to defend against a small incursion force. But once they were inside their target, it would be very different. The gunship banked hard, wings trailing a skin of mist through the moon's thin atmosphere. The main communication array loomed above them, the arc of its dish cutting into the fire-streaked black of the sky. At the base of the array sat the primary communication control. Kestros's eyes found the blackened hole blown in the armored shutters.
"Explosive entry," he said into the vox. "It seems you were correct in your assessment of how they took the moon."
"Of course," came Andromeda's reply.
The gunships spun closer. G-force thumped through the fuselage as they banked tight around the array. A rune began to pulse amber at the edge of Kestros's helmet display. The array was so close it felt as though he could touch it. The rune snapped to green. He leapt from the gunship. For a second he spiraled, his momentum pushing him on as the moon's weak gravity caught him. Then he fired his jump pack. Twin tongues of flame breathed from his back and slammed him into a dive. His weapons were in his hands. Behind him his brothers followed, spiraling in his wake as they dived from the gunships. The wall of the control center grew closer, filling his vision. The hole in the blast shutters was a widening mouth into darkness. He triggered the jump pack's maximum thrust. Force crashed through his body. Blood pulled away from his head and chest, even as his second heart fought it. He triggered his chainsword. Vibration trembled up his sword arm. The breach in the blast shutters came up to meet him, and for an instant he felt that he was frozen, balanced on a point between the starlight and the blackness that lay beyond. He burst through the breach. He had an instant to form an impression of the circular chamber and banked machines. A burst of gunfire reached up and punched him from the air. He fell, hit the deck, and the thrust of his jump pack yanked him into a block of machinery with the force of a Titan's kick. His helmet display flashed red with damage runes. Jagged edges of broken armor cut into his flesh. He cut the jump pack as he rolled and came to his feet. His eyes found a target, a warrior in scaled armor, and he was sprinting forwards, bolt pistol firing, shells exploding across the warrior's shoulders, shredding silver trim and blue lacquer. The warrior flinched aside, brought his bolt gun up and fired. Kestros's chainsword struck as the first bolt shell kicked from the muzzle. The spinning teeth cut through the warrior's wrist joint and ripped down through skin, muscle, and bone. The bolt gun spun away, tumbling with recoil. The Alpha Legion warrior staggered, but the loss of a hand did not slow him. He rammed the crown of his helm into Kestros's faceplate, and his helmet display cut out. Kestros spun back instinctively and felt something sharp slash across his throat. Blood began to run. Atmosphere hissed from the slit in his neck armor. His visor display blinked back on. He could taste the air in his helm thinning. The warrior was in front of him, a dagger in his remaining hand. Kestros cut, slashing his chainsword across the legionnaire's face. The warrior swayed back, the chain teeth snarling as they spun through air, then snapped forwards, muscle and momentum focused behind the tip of the dagger. Kestros slammed the muzzle of his bolt pistol into the warrior's throat and pulled the trigger. Bolt shells ripped out, soaring the warrior's head from his body in a shower of detonations. Kestros was already past the corpse as it fell, firing and hacking into the next enemy. The chamber was a blur of blue and yellow armor, of blades and gunfire. His eyes moved through every detail, even as he cut and fired, and the air hissed from his helm. There were only a handful of Alpha Legion in the control center, three or four at most. They were good, but they would not stand against the 30 Imperial fists facing them, and he could see no sign of their target. By the breach, Andromeda was climbing down to the floor, her movement slowed by the bulk of her void suit. Dragged behind her was Incarnus, his limbs bound to his sides, floating in a suspensor net.
"Andromeda," he said, his voice a hiss in the draining air of his helm. "The target is here. Is Alpharius here?"
Andromeda moved closer to Incarnus, and he heard the crackle of static.
"No, he's not. But the turncoat says that he can read something in the surface thoughts of the others."
"What?"
He was here, and he knew someone would come for him. They are ready.
Kestros felt numbness spread through him, even as he ducked aside from a burst of gunfire and raised his pistol to fire a reply.
"Reach Master Arcamus," he said. "He must..."
"I've tried," she cut him off. "There is no reply."
Storage Vault 278, Hydromoon Fortress, Plutonian Orbit. Arcamus let the static buzz in his ear for a second before cutting it off. The storage vault was still quiet.
"The exit hatches are sealed, Lord," said Nucrio. "The lock mechanisms have been overridden."
"Can you break them?"
"Yes, but not quickly."
"Begin."
"Lord,"
came the voice of one of the other squad members,
"there is something..."
A sound like silk rippling flicked through the air. Arcamus turned, eyes focusing on the direction the sound had come from, bolt gun ready.
"Squad, converge on chamber,"
he said into the vox. He heard a blurt of static from the vox and then the sound again. No reply came from the vox. He turned his head slowly, vision cycling between threat displays. Nothing. Just the low hum of active power armor diluting the silence. Arcamus lit Oathword's power field. Lightning wreathed the mace's head. He was perfectly still, his senses stretching into the stillness of the chamber. There was a blur at the edge of his sight. He began to turn. The spear struck him in the chest. The blade passed through his armor without a sound. Coldness whipped through his torso. He felt blood gush into his throat. Black smoke was rising from the wound as armor and flesh dissolved. Alpharius stood in front of him, holding the spear steady in his chest. The Primarch's head was bare, his eyes dark and without feeling. Arcamus gripped his mace and willed it to rise. Alpharius ripped the spear blade back. Blood and vapor poured from the wound, and Arcamus felt himself fall as numbness spread through his body. He hit the ground, breath bubbling from between his lips. Alpharius looked down at him.
"Poor Arcamus. I wondered which bait my brother would take. But it seems that he has left you to die in his place."
Primary Communication Array Control, Hydromoon Fortress, Plutonian Orbit.
"Is his vox active?"
Kestros snarled, as a burst of gunfire chewed into the machine stack above him. He subconsciously counted the rounds and timing, and rose and fired back as the volley slackened. His squad moved past him, firing their bolt pistols in perfect synchronicity. Bolt rounds burst in the open door from one of the entrances to the control room. He saw one warrior reel, the front of his armor shredding, before he was up and running forwards. The Alpha Legion counterassault had come within seconds of them taking the control room. Kestros and his brothers were engaging enemies in three directions. He'd already lost five of his command in scant moments. That the unbreakable truth was still active somewhere out in the void and in vox contact was a small point of light in a darkening situation.
"Negative," said Cheo in his ear. "I have lost all contact with Lord Arcamus and his squad. Etheric sensors detect that the station is alive with teleport jamming and distortion signals. If it seemed plausible, I would say that they knew someone would try to teleport aboard and pulled them to an individual location."
Kestros let out a breath as he reloaded his bolt pistol. He thought of all the things that Andromeda and Arcamus had said about the Alpha Legion. Lies within lies, deception within deception, traps within traps. He turned and looked at where Andromeda and the captured Psyker Incarnus sheltered from the gunfire behind a bank of machinery. The Psyker was looking at him, the irisless eyes pale behind the transparent visor of his void suit. Incarnus smiled, pupils dark pinpricks in white.
"This was a trap,"
Kestros said across the vox.
"We did not follow them here. They led us."
Andromeda's head jerked up as she heard his words. Then she froze, her face still inside her visor, mouth and eyes open as though she were a still picked image. Frost spread across her suit.
"Alpha to Omega,"
said Incarnus's voice inside Kestros's skull. Kestros tried to raise his pistol, but frost was climbing his arm, and his limbs wouldn't move. Pain lanced into his skull.
"I was of the Crimson Walkers," said a voice inside his skull. "Did you honestly think that a psi clamp could hold me?"
Kestros felt his gun arm begin to rise, but now it was not his will that moved it. Pain coiled down his arms as invisible cords yanked his muscles into movement. Around him, the rest of the squad were still moving, oblivious as they fought. He poured his will against the presence in his skull. Blood was running from his tear ducts.
The Lunar Witch is right. You really are very simple creatures.
The Lunar Witch has also stood close enough to do this, said Andromeda.
Incarnus spun as Andromeda brought her knife up into his gut. Incarnus gasped, blood splattering the inside of his visor. Kestros felt his limbs unlock and aimed his bolt pistol.
Get clear,
he shouted. Andromeda ripped the knife free and leapt back. Kestros fired. A bolt hit Incarnus in the chest and ripped his torso into shreds. Scraps of void suit and bone pattered against the banks of machines. He looked up at Andromeda and tilted his head in question.
The Alpha Legion are not the only ones with secrets, she said.
What?
Began Kestros, but Treo's voice cut him off.
Something is happening,
Static boiled up.
Fleet...
Repeat,
shouted Kestros.
What is the strength of the enemy fleet?
A burst of gunfire hit him from his right as more Alpha Legion warriors came from a passage opening. He gunned his chainsword and leapt towards them. Treo's voice was a static-cut shout in his ears.
The fleet is...
His feet shook the floor. His armor sang with the kiss of shrapnel.
The fleet is ours!
Blood was iron in his mouth, and he could see the enemy, dark armored silhouettes behind the veil of flame. And then Cheo's voice came again, though what he said seemed utterly impossible.
The phalanx is here!
Plutonian orbit. The phalanx came from the trans-Neptunian Gulf like a comet. She was the largest ship that had ever served mankind. Others had made warships that tried to rival her size. The Vengeful Spirit, the Furious Abyss, and the Iron Blood. None, though, could match the flagship of the Imperial Fists. A fortress set to move amongst the stars, she possessed enough firepower to destroy fleets and break empires. Fortress clusters crowned her bulk, rising in black stone and gilded metal. Vast cannons extended from her spine. Tiers of weapon batteries and launch bays marched down her flanks. Within her heart rode thousands of Imperial Fists and tens of thousands of mortal soldiers. Alone, she was a sight that had brought civilizations to surrender. But she was not alone. The Monarch of Fire cut through the night. Plumes of plasma trailed from vents on her prow and cage-topped towers. Arcs of blue lightning wreathed her guns as they built charge. Within her hull, reactors, which were a mystery even to the highest initiates of the machine cult, poured raw plasma into the cannons that studded her prow. Vast doors peeled back along her flanks. Racks of bombardment launchers slid into the starlight. In any other fleet, she would have been a queen of devastation. But in the armada of Rogal Dorn, she was the herald to her monarch. Beneath the two great ships, an armada followed. Battle barges, grand cruisers, destroyers, gun barks and frigates cut the night into shreds with the fire of their engines. All of them had been travelling on momentum from the inner system. Slingshotted through the solar system's competing gravity wells, they had arrived at the system edge unseen by both Pluto's garrison and the Alpha Legion. Now they lit their engines and fell from the dark like burning arrows. The Phalanx and the Monarch fired as one. Three Alpha Legion ships ceased to exist. Spherical explosions blinked into being. Waves of force and energy rippled out. Gunships launched from the Phalanx, a cloud of black and gold specks spreading out and out. The ships circling Pluto slid on, frozen in movement, trapped in an instant of shock. And then the Phalanx fired again. Void shields collapsed across multiple targets. Fresh clouds of fire added to those already glowing like bright inks poured into clear water. Guns roared and roared, fire pouring into the dark without pause. Light flared and strobed as hulls tore and reactors poured their life energy into the vacuum. Kerberos hurled macro shells and lasfire at the phalanx. Its layered shields flared with rainbow colours as they burst. Stone bastions shattered. Stone and corpses spun away from it, burning in the wash of energy. The phalanx bled, but held its fire from Kerberos. Smaller ships darted forwards, turbo lasers reducing the Fortress Moon's defense batteries to glowing craters. Bombers swarmed Kerberos, spinning around the torrents of fire pouring from the stronghold. Light blistered Kerberos's face. Its batteries fell silent. Targeting arrays became slag and guns became blind. The assault craft ran into the gaps in the Fortress Moon's defenses. Storm eagles flew down canyons gouged in the rock, scattering assault troops from their doors. Breaching pods slammed into the surface, bit through and poured Terminators and Breacher units into the warren of tunnels beneath. The Lernaeans met them, and the gloom roared with the scream of chain fists and the howl of Vulkite beams. In the gulf beyond Pluto, Sigismund's fleet pulled free of the tangle of Alpha Legion ships as the Monarch of Fire plunged into them. The three Sisters of Spite spiraled in the great ship's wake, and, within Pluto's orbit, the phalanx moved with unhurried brutality, an empress of war walking her domain, cloaked in the gold and red of destruction, the light of her guns, the glitter of jewels in her crown. Before her lay Hydra.